Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision Free Big Book Study. My name is Russ M., and I'm a recovered compulsive eater outside of Philadelphia. Today is Friday, May 16th, 2025. Today we're reading in Working with Others, page 97, the fourth paragraph, and we're starting with for the type of alcoholic, and we're ending with we think not. All right, our readers, for 12 Steps, Tens and P, to 12 Traditions, Barbara W. Reading the Texas, Katie G. Page 164 is Nancy R. Newcomer greeters, Tony B. Second hour host is Hanietta R. And announcements is Kathy S. will be taking care of it. Our share IDs for yesterday, Thursday, May 15, 2025, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 22,436. That's 22436. Eastern Time meeting is 22,437, 22437. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. Or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I've asked Tendon P to read the 12 steps for us for today.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Tendon P checking in from New York. And here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Denzel. Next up is Barbara W. with the 12 traditions.
Good morning, everybody. This is Barbara, compulsive overeater. Tradition 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscious. Our leaders but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop overeating. 4, each group should be autonomous except matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry his message to compulsive overeaters who still suffer. 6, OA group ought to never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. These problems of money, property can divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supported, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA is such ought to never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. And 10, Overeaters Anonymous has but one opinion on no opinions on outside issues. Hence, our name ought to never be drawn into public controversies. 11, our public-related policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is our spiritually foundation of all these traditions. It's ever reminding us to place principles above personalities. Thank you. Let me share.
Thanks, Barbara. Thank you, Tenzin. All right, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and stop and share what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. So today we resume our study in working with others. We're on page 97, the fourth paragraph, starting with, for the type of alcoholic, and we're ending with, we think not. And Katie G is going to start us off and share.
Good morning, Russell. Thanks for taking the meeting. Good morning, everyone. Katie G, recovered compulsive eater in Boston. For the type of alcoholic who is able and willing to get well, little charity in the ordinary sense of the word is needed or wanted. The men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. Yet we do go to great extremes to provide each other with these very things when such action is warranted. This may seem inconsistent, but we think not. I love this line about crying for money and shelter. I have alcoholic priorities. So what does that mean? When I came into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, I wanted a diet with group support, but more importantly, I wanted you to understand that my life was a mess, that I needed a man, that I needed a job, that I needed money, and I needed these things in order to get sober. But what's so incredible about the next couple pages that I love is it reminds me over and over again, if I put the external needs in front of my internal problem, I'm going to eat again. We move on to talk about burn the idea into the consciousness of every man. He can get well regardless of what anyone says or does. I can be sober, considerate, and helpful regardless of what anyone says or does. But again, I have alcoholic priorities. So here I am dying from an eating disorder, dying from being underweight, dying from getting on the scale, dying from diet soda, dying from gum, dying. And I'm like, well, let me have a man. Let me have kids. I can't do this. You don't understand. But the thing is, I can get sober. I can also be emotionally sober, regardless of what anyone says or does. You know, and as a recovered woman today, I have to remember that. I have to remember that no matter what is going on in my life, I can be sober, considerate, and helpful regardless of what anyone says or does. But again, I have alcoholic priorities. So I think, you know, and you guys know, I came into these rooms, Susie single, with absolutely nothing in my life. And thanks be to God, one moment at a time, one day at a time, God has filled my life. But if I put my life in front of my recovery, I will lose my life, because anything that comes between me and God is going to have to go. And I say this with my emotional sobriety, like, I get stuck in the ABCs, right? A, I am powerless over alcohol. I cannot manage my own life. B, that no human power. I get stuck on human powers. I think that if you just say this, or if I just say this, I tell myself the lie. If I had what you had, I wouldn't feel this way. If you did what I wanted, I wouldn't feel this way. And what has Overeaters Anonymous done for me, besides giving me my life, it's helped me grow up, which is what I need to do each and every day, to realize that no matter what is going on externally, I can be sober, I can be considerate, I can be helpful, because I am abstinent, I've gone through these 12 steps, and I have a power greater than me that is restoring me to sanity one day at a time. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Katie. Appreciate it. So now we're going to open up the lines for sharing, and although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day. So if you share it on Wednesday or Thursday, please step back and share time. What I need is your name, first name, first initial of your last name, and where you're calling from. And I'll let you know where we're at throughout the meeting. I let you know every couple breaks. All right, who wants to share?
Vanessa S. in New Jersey.
Vanessa.
Larry K.
Larry.
Susan G.
Susan. All right, don't be shy. We got plenty of time.
Vanessa O.
Awesome. Come on, we could take a couple more. Who else?
Dara F.
Dara F. And then let's get one more.
Kelly G.
Kelly G. So we got Vanessa S., Larry K., Susan G., Vasa O., Dara F., Kelly G. All right, Vanessa, you're up.
Thank you. Thank you for everyone doing service today. Listening to this reading and looking at it in the book, I do have reasons. It's not just the alcoholic foods, but the alcoholic behaviors and the alcoholic thinking of, I have been using food to quote unquote push through being tired and being sick, to push through and reach the goals that I want. But it's not working anymore, and I'm having a lot of effects health-wise. But it made me think of that even though my body might be tired, resting is the only way that's going to fix that. And whether I can get so focused in my disease of trying to meet this goal, well, once I have this accomplishment done, then it's going to be fine. Once I've done this, or once I have this title, and that's not true. That is not true. And failure, or the opportunity that I thought I would want, or the opportunity that I thought that I needed, might not work out, and that's separate from my food. So I've been using food to control that, control the outcome. And it worked initially. It doesn't work anymore. And it never, and now that I have some clarity, I don't know that it ever worked. My disease mind was tricking me into thinking that it worked. So I wanted to share that, that I thought that if I had this and this and this much amount of money, that this would change. And it doesn't. It didn't. It's not changing for me. So I will keep coming back. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Vanessa. Next up is Larry K., followed by Susan G.
Hey, Russ. Good morning. Larry K., recovered compulsive reader from Chicago. Yeah, I just wanted to chime in on this. With regard to charity and carrying the message, you know, we go to great extremes when such actions are warranted, and we rely on God to help us to understand that. You know, something's been bothering me recently that I'll share with you, and that is that I'm not going to lose any sleep over it, but I think what happens and what's bothering me sometimes is that, that for me, this is a program of love, compassion, kindness, and tolerance for the downtrodden. Who are the downtrodden? Well, you're all here, me included. We didn't get here on an upswing, that's for sure. And there's not one, as much as I love all of you, there's not one human being on this line this morning, not a single one, most especially me, who has the final interpretation of every word, sentence, and the final interpretation of this text. In my world, we call this, it's a very dangerous bias. And you know what we call it? Well, in my world, we call it illusory superiority. Illusory superiority, it's kind of a catchy name. And this cognitive, which means thinking, this cognitive bias occurs when we overestimate our own knowledge or abilities in a specific area, believing that, you know, somehow we have a clearer understanding of ideas than we actually do. And I can fall prey to that as much as anyone. And what this leads to is it leads to assume that my interpretations are correct and I dismiss all others. And for goodness sakes, let me not justify this rigid position by a kind of a woe is me attitude that our rates of recovery is lower than it should or could be. You know, that often comes down to people who know the instructions. They get on the lines every morning from the roadmap. They know the instructions, but simply are not willing to do the work. I'm not saying that's in every case, but in the many cases, come on, guys, that's a lot of it. It's not always that they don't receive the instructions. They're just not ready to do the work. When I'm giving charity, I have to remember the downtrodden here, and I never want to convey, I hope I don't convey too much know-it-allism, because if you hear that from me, understand you're hearing that from an addict. Not only are you hearing it from an addict, you're hearing it when you hear humility from me, and a focus in on the book, and humility in that as I read the book, I'm going to form some interpretations that might be different than yours, and that's okay. It's okay. Some people are going to die of this disease, and that's very sad. That's not on me or anyone else here. It just is. Could we do better? Sure. But I value my humility more than I try to convey compassion through a rigid hammer over your head. Because when I convey know-it-allism and big-shotism and that I have the final answer. Gather around. Thanks, Russ. Just need to finish. When they gather around, I'm going to tell you what's the right answer. I'm going to appeal to the people that feel abused as normal and comfortable. They will latch on to that. I'd rather convey humility and love and kindness and tolerance. With that, I pass. Thanks for the extra time, Russ. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Lar. Appreciate you, brother. Next up is Susan G., followed by Vasa O.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Russ, and good morning, everybody. Susan G., recovered compulsive overeater in Tennessee. And I appreciate the previous shares very much. I'm so grateful. I just want to say thank you to everyone that shows up on the daily, because I've been here every day, most days. I'm the type of alcoholic who's able and willing to get well. So I've got to do the work, kind of what Larry was talking about. But there are people that want everything in their world to be just so, and then they'll do the work. That was my diet mentality, you know. Everything's got to be in good order, you know. All my family needs to behave the way I want them to, and I need to have this amount of money and live a certain way, and then I'll be able to follow that diet, right? It says, you know, we're on the wrong track, and I was definitely on the wrong track. I also know that with each person I work with, the humility kind of that Larry's talking about is I approach that from a standpoint that asking my higher power to let me see them as I need to see them, to work with them and kind of meet them where they are in relatable language or my experiences that can help them. I will just also say on a personal note that my daughter is had complications from childbirth April 30th and was on a ventilator for quite a while, and I was up there at the hospital. And you know what? It was not a great circumstance, you know, for me at times, but I did the work. It works. It really does. It's my favorite line in the book. I think it works. It really does. And I made phone calls throughout my day, not to check them off a list to say I've called so many people a day, but because I needed to experience connection and to be reminded. And at one point I asked one of our dear fellows, I said, I feel so powerless over her and what's going on. And she is one of us as well. I was just told, recover, recover, recover. And simply put, that was just absolutely the truth. So I'm here today because I'm a stone-cold food junkie, and I'm recovered, but I'm not cured. Today I don't suffer with this disease. And if you want what we have, you can have it. So kind of rambling today, but I just wanted to get on to say thank you all for your prayers and thoughts and I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to be a member of OA and a member of Vision for You. That has really saved my life. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Susan. So before Vasa jumps on here, let me let you know where we're at. We're working with others. Page 97, the fourth paragraph, for the type of alcoholic, ending with, we think not. And next up is Vasa O.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Russ, for your service. And I'm Vasa, grateful recovered compulsive overeater, calling from Foxborough, Massachusetts. And yes, I was on the wrong track before I came to Overeaters Anonymous. I didn't even know I was on the wrong track. I thought, you know, I was doing fine. I just needed to lose the weight and I'll be fine. No, I found it differently. I was always looking outside from myself for that happiness, you know. Could have been the boyfriend, the husband, the man, the house, the children, money, possessions. And I did not have a relationship with Christ. I went to church every once in a while. I didn't know I could, you know. And I was, thank you, God, I was led in this program. And my sponsor that worked with me gave me what she had. And this is what we do. We take it from each other and we give it away. That was her thing. She said, what I'm giving you, Vasa, everything, it's for free. I don't want nothing in return from you, just to give it away out there. And this is what I do. So I needed to put all those things aside, money, the children, man, husband, possessions, put it all on the side and start anew, a relationship with, you know, higher power, and on a daily basis that I didn't have, and to put the focus on my recovery. And that's what I did. I threw myself in the recovery because I've been suffering with the food addiction for so long, so many years. I've shared this many times. I didn't want to die. I wanted to live. And I was 41 years old when I came to this program, and I thought I was so old. And I'm double since then. It is by the grace of my higher power and being in the program and working through the steps the way they're laid out. No, I don't do them perfect, you know. But the only thing I need to be, it's not even perfect. I need to focus what I put in my mouth, because that's my medicine that's have kept me all these years, the health that I have and the things that I can do today. And I'm just so, so grateful. And I love the vision for you. And I love going paragraph by paragraph and dissect every paragraph the way it comes. So it says, the man who cries for money, shelter before conquering alcohol. None of that is true, you know. I needed to come and surrender to my higher power and the program, and then my family and then others. Thank you for letting me share my path.
Thanks, Vasa. Next up is Dara F., followed by Kelly G.
Hi, this is Dara F. from Virginia. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And I really wasn't positive what I was going to share, but I wanted to just jump on in and claim my seat. And I guess what this makes me think of, this reading, is when I came in, I was in college, just finishing up my college years, and I tried it. I didn't get it. I was in and out for a couple of years, and then I dropped out for about another 40 years. When I came back, I was in my 50s, and my ankles were swollen. I had recently gained like 120 pounds. I wanted to be completely invisible. If people didn't recognize me, people who I knew well, I'd just walk right past them. I was grateful not to be recognized. I was just so embarrassed and humiliated and physically sick and tired and just sick of being myself and sick of my old behaviors. And I went into the meeting, and I basically just said, I'm here. I don't really want a sponsor because I don't want to have to tell anybody what I'm doing and report to anybody. However, I desperately need a sponsor. Would somebody sponsor me? And I got somebody to temp sponsor me, who ended up being a good sponsor. And then I've had, you know, varying sponsors since. But I think that I was in a place where I had reached bottom. And I didn't say my relationship with my kids and my husband needs to be better before I can stop eating. And I didn't say I need to do XYZ or have XYZ before I'm ready to surrender to this program. I was like, let me surrender to this program and help me, please. But I can help myself by doing what I can. And when I see that quality in a sponsee, somebody who's at bottom and ready to surrender, I love to sponsor them. When I see somebody who's still got ideas in their head and still wants conditions met, I might try to sponsor them, but it's a lot harder because I can't make a person get there. So I was grateful for desperation. With that, I'll say thank you very much, and I pass.
Thank you, Dara. I'm sorry. I mean to butcher the name. Next is Kelly G., and then we're going to take another list.
Good morning. Kelly G., recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. Thanks so much, Russ, for your service. And Katie G., what a killer opening. Everything you said that came out of your mouth was like, yep. And what I think about is sometimes I hear, you know, people say, I can throw you a life jacket, right? You're sinking in the ocean. You just fell off the Titanic. And it's like, wait, do you have a pink one? And that's kind of me. It's like I wanted everything a certain way. And it's like, how desperate do you want it? And it's like I needed it. I needed this recovery. I needed God so bad. It was like more than I needed to breathe. So it doesn't matter what color the life jacket is. You know, it doesn't matter how comfortable the life raft is. It's like just to grab a hold of it, to exhale is what I crave the most. And, you know, the lead share said about, I want to fix internal problems with external things and anything that blocks me from my higher power, which oftentimes material things, physical appearance, how can I fix myself? What can I alter? What can I enhance? What can I do to take the edge off? And it is so fleeting. And I remember, you know, I ended a relationship that on the outside would have been a slam dunk. And in that relationship, I started worshiping material things because he was very well off. And I had to get out of that relationship because it blocked me from God. And I, today, my relationship with God is the most important thing in my entire life. And it's so important that I make sure that I'm reminded of that every single day. And I accredit that to my God instincts. Anything I feel that feels a little too big, and I feel an obsession kind of centering around that, I know it's something I need to look at. And, you know, in all honesty, I struggle with the body scale at times, and I'm always honest about it, and it's something I want to work on, but I truly, like, anything that blocks me from God, it's almost like this siren that goes off, and it's like I like can't shut it off. It's like this humming noise, and I don't want that. I don't want that, and I've been so, so blessed to be able to have such a full life, such an amazing career. And it's like, I don't have that humming. I can be present. I can succeed. I can show up. But it all starts with knowing that God is everything. Everything is second to God. I have nothing without God. Thank you so much, Russ. Have a great day.
Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate it. Now we're going to open up the lines for Sharon again.
Sarah T. from
Hold on a second. Working with others, page 97, the fourth paragraph, I believe that is, for the type of alcoholic, and it ends with, we think not. So I know I got Sarah and Elizabeth, but I'm not
Jennifer
sure.
Jennifer C.
Elizabeth D. And there was a Sarah. I just think that's the last one.
Sarah, are you there?
All right. Who else? Let's take three more.
Nancy P.
Nance. Okay. Who else? Let's get two more in there. Four? Let's just take these four.
Anita J.
Anita. Anita J. All right. Let's roll with this for now. Sarah, Elizabeth D., Jennifer C., Nancy P., and Anita J. Sarah, you're up. Star one, Sarah.
Oh, thank you so much. Sorry, I thought I was unmuted. Good morning, everybody. I am Sarah T. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. Really, really grateful to be here this morning. When I was hearing this reading, the very first thing I thought of was, you know, wanting all these external things before I get abstinent or sober is the equivalent of like bleeding out and saying, I want a job before I go to the emergency room, you know, and that never really occurred to me before, but it really is that dramatic. And that's how much I needed my higher power and recovery. But I really was obsessed with working from the outside in. And I was also thinking about how, you know, I've been here for, I don't know, going on a month or so, but also in a way longer. But, you know, as I'm working the steps through the big book, where I am right now is actually really struggling with noticing some repercussions from my illness. Like, you know, our disease has consequences. And I appreciate all of you. And so many people have reached out to me to welcome me. And every single one of you has reminded me to stay in today and to keep my eyes on my higher power. And because of these repercussions, I keep trying, I'm going back to, you know, trying to manage well and get what I want. And to me, that's kind of the equivalent of the same thing, right? It's like I can only be okay if this works and this works and this works and this works. And that's getting really clear to me. And, you know, I heard on this line the other day, you know, fear is what if and faith is even if. And that's really stuck with me because I think I spend a lot of my time in fear. And I think that's what that is about needing the car and the job and the partner and the this and the that before. Like, I need to feel safe and okay and feel like I'm in control before I can do this work. And what I'm told is that's upside down and that's not at all how this works. And that's different. That's different than what the world tells us. Right? You know, when we come here, we're like, are you sure? You know, and it also makes me think of that flimsy read, you know, because it does really, that's one of my favorite lines in the big book is, you know, what at first seemed a flimsy read, that word flimsy is just so descriptive because it just feels like it's not going to work. And then it proves to be so wonderful and the loving, powerful hand of God. And I just am so grateful for all of you who point me back to that time and again. And it's like, no, stay in the flimsy. stay in that because that's God. And so thanks so much for letting me share. All of you have a wonderful day. I'll pass.
Thank you, Sarah. Next up is Elizabeth D., followed by Jennifer C.
Good morning, Russ. It's Elizabeth D., recovered in the Boston area. Thank you for your service, Russ, and for everybody who does service to make this daily meeting possible. I'm just so full of emotion this morning for so many reasons, but reading this chapter, it came to me, and I've been hearing it online, just how beautifully nuanced, spiritually nuanced, the big book is in the way things are written. It says, this may seem inconsistent, but we think not. And the way I read this is, you know, there's a fine line here, they're saying, between going overboard with charity because we think we are powerful and can change someone's life versus the discernment that comes from my higher power that tells me, no, now is the time not to enable this sponsee, but to slowly and gently and lovingly take your hand away and allow them to have their own journey. This has been a long road for me to learn that humility and to learn that, you know, in the inconsistency is where God, for me, my higher power is found. And that's why sponsoring has been such a sacred journey for me. And I'm telling you, I have done it so poorly in the past. And I am making amends for that every day. But today I try only with God's help to be the sponsor that my higher power wants. And that means a sponsor who really doesn't know much. I don't really know how to, I don't know the answers. I don't know the answers. I only know what has worked for me. And I try as best I can to shine a light on the path. And that's all I do. I'm not the light. I shine a light on the path that I followed. And that's really all I can do. But I don't know if any of this is making any sense at all. But I'm just so thrilled to be part of this fellowship and grateful to have had a chance again to find this relationship, this deeper relationship with my higher power and my God that's helping me one day at a time have a life, you know, full stop, have a life. So I'll pass with that. Thanks, Russ.
Thank you. Next up is Jennifer C., followed by Nancy P.
Hey, good morning, Russ. Thanks for your service. Thank you, everybody, for your shares. So grateful to be here with y'all this morning, one day at a time. A couple things stick out to me in this paragraph. First of all, the men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. You know, that word conquering reminds me, page 44. If that be the case, if you're really an alcoholic, if you're really, truly a compulsive overeater, if this is all true for you, then you're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. There's that word conquer again. And so what we're helping the newcomer to do, what we're helping the chronic relapser to do is build that foundation where we know that only God is going to save me from this. It's going to be God or I'm going out. And God eventually relieves me of the pain. But the pain initially is the motivator. I went through the steps over and over and over again. My experience is that I didn't get recovered going through the steps one time. I went through the steps, I got a little relief, and then I got back into the food. I went through the steps again, and then I got a little more relief, and then I went back into the food. And the pain kept motivating me, and the resentment kept motivating me. Why is this resentment not going away? It's been on my four steps 16 times. Like, it's not, okay, let's go deeper. God, please give me a new experience with steps 1, 2, and 3. God, please give me a new experience with steps 4 and 5. Dad, please save me. Do for me what I cannot do for myself. Only a spiritual experience, only a psychic change is going to be sufficient enough to change my personality in such a way that I don't use food as a solution anymore. And it's the pain that motivates me. And if I interrupt that for somebody and I try to relieve that pain too soon, they may not have the motivation to do the work. And, you know, the other sentence that this reminds me of is from 61. Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is she not a victim of the delusion that she can wrest satisfaction and happiness if she just gets everything she wants? Right? But here's the good news. The good news is, fast forward, going on 20 years of marriage, my marriage is better than it's ever been. All resentment towards my husband gone. gone. I feel like I'm falling in love all over again. I'm making three times as much as I was when I started this process. All that sounds great, right? But it's not the central fact of my life today. The central fact is God's power, God's love, God's way of life. And does life get better? Yes, but sometimes it gets worse before it gets better.
And I have to
be okay with that, right? Because my life circumstances can't be the central fact because life changes. God doesn't. That has to be the central fact of my life today. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you all.
Thanks, Jennifer. Next up is Nancy P., followed by Anita J.
Hey, good morning, Russ. Good morning, everybody. Nancy P. with Kevin West Newton, Massachusetts. I wasn't able or willing to get well, and I was on the wrong track. And by the wrong track, I thought for between 1971 and 2017, I thought abstinence was the goal. And there were some times during that, my tenure in Overeaters Anonymous, that my body was the right size. But I mean, it was just a disaster. When I think about my brain, you know, I can't say I was in relapse because I was never not my brain, either my body, my brain, or both, was always like not just in the food but in the pit. And as long as I worshipped abstinence, I got nothing. And here's the thing, you know, we're like the smart people here, doctors, lawyers, you know, teachers, nurses, you know, executives. I mean, we span the spectrum of every profession, and there's a lot of smart people here. And had I known what was waiting for me, I couldn't, my fantasies are not the same as dreams. Fantasies are like waking dreams because I can change them anytime I want on a heartbeat, you know. And I worshipped, I thought, abstinence. If I could just put the food down, everything would be great, you know. And I'm reminded of the, in Bill's story, what was I to do with my prize, you know, this prize that I thought was the prize. It's a, you know, I don't even like the word. But all I do in this is what I'm told, either by my sponsor or by the book. And how do I get that done? You know, usually I end with, say it with me, surrender, surrender, surrender. I do that because when that happens, what I need comes to me. You know, when I finally surrendered, I had everything. I had a beautiful house. I had a lovely family. I had a great job, a husband who loves me, you know, two cars in the garage, a fancy vacation every year, you know, everything that I could possibly want, I had in spades and more. And yet I was 211 pounds sobbing in my car over my donuts. And I didn't know what was in store for me. You know, it says in the beginning of this chapter, to have a fellowship spring up around you, we know you will not want to miss it. My attitude was always, I'm fine, just leave me alone. And you know, this step is all about three things. It's not the result. I mean, I did have a spiritual awakening, okay, but that's just the beginning. That's where everything starts. Now I'm at the starting line waiting for the gun to go off. Spiritual awakening, bang, practice the principles, help other people and practice the principles. And even when it's hard, and, you know, I have a great husband who does love me, who does the very best for me, but I'm not in concert with him right now. And I need to that. And even though he's a fantastic guy, but everything that I got, everything that I have, is still only the beginning. Every day is better than the last. And it all starts with surrender. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Nance. Next up is Anita J. And we have time for one more after that.
Okay, Rush. Thank you so much.
Good morning.
For your service. And this is Anita J., recovered in Massachusetts. Yes, I was on the wrong path. I was there, the body in the chair, for decades, but thinking that the outward meant it all. And I would hear people who say that they picked up this or that, And I thought, that's all right, because their body doesn't change. I mean, I was all to the body. Now I know, because I didn't know that I didn't have to live with the feeling of impending doom every bloody day. That's not how my higher power envisioned me to be. He wanted me to be outward looking, thinking about other people, but not self-serving way, not by totally giving up my own self. He would show me how to do it. And that when I go to bed at night, I've got that feeling of this was a good day. Who did I help? And you know, the funny thing is, the more I helped others, how come I felt so much more recovered? I don't know if it helped them, but that seems to be, according to Bill and Lois, and I think Harlan, I mean, that's the only way to be. And if it's good enough for them, by golly, I don't know where I got that from. It's good enough for me, and I pass.
Thanks, Anita. So we have time for one more share. Who would like it?
Bonnie B. from Minnesota.
Alexis F.
Bonnie grabbed. All right, Bonnie B.
Hey, thanks so much, Russ. Thanks for all the shares, everyone. What an amazing meeting today. So my takeaway from this meeting is it's the same thing. Die to myself, be of service to others. Die to myself, be of service to others. Not an easy thing some days when life seems to present itself. And maybe you can hear the echo. I'm in an empty townhouse that has been gutted back in Minnesota because of circumstances outside of our control, and yet abstinent by the grace of God as I wash windows and pull carpet and do what needs to be done here. And weave program in and out, because program doesn't get left back in Florida. Program gets in the car with me and it goes every place I go. And why is that? Because my God goes every place I go. My disease wants me to live in one of two places, either morbid reflection or projection. Projection is always fear, fear-based. And I know this is the root of my issue, selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, driven by thousands of forms of fear. A little bit of fear right now, to be honest. But this is the reality of it. God doesn't live in either of those places for me. He lives in the present moment. And this is the gift of this program, and this is the gift of the pause. If I stay in the present moment, my God is always here. If I go out there or go back there, he's not there, and it turns into quicksand. And so I have a solution. The solution is get back into God, and I do that by dying to myself, being of service to others, and doing the next right thing. And everything else is an add-on, and it all just sort of follows up. And so thank you, thank you, thank you for you guys for being around me and for encircling me and for praying for me and encouraging me. And we truly have a fellowship like none other. And with that, I will pass. Bonnie B. from Minnesota.
Thanks, Bonnie. We actually got a minute and a half. Who would like that?
Alexis F.
All right, Alexis, you got it. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm not the greatest sharer in the world, and I don't have too much to say, but I would like to say that when I did my fourth step, I got very depressed. And because of the nature of my personality and the personality disorder that I have, I can't treat myself like other people, just like compulsive overeaters can't treat themselves like other people, because they don't know the circumstances within. So I like to read quite a bit, and that's my hobby, reading. And I like to share what I found when I was reading, and last night I was reading a book that said the most spiritual practice on earth is to be healed of our addictions. And it spoke to me, and it said, you know, like, I have a lot of worth because I've given up so much and have come so far. Thank you.
Sorry about that, Alexis. Thank you very much. And thanks for sharing. Thanks for everyone who shared today for this meeting. And we're going to have another unrecorded hour study coming up after the closing. So stick around for that. All right, today's share ride day. Friday, May 16th, 2025, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 22,439. That's 22439. And now we're going to close with the reading from the big book. Nancy R. is going to read it. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep it till then, and then we'll pray the Serenity Prayer. Star one, Nancy.
Hey, Russ, I'm sorry. I forgot I was doing this. Give me 30 seconds here.
No problem.
Okay, page 164. I'm Nancy R., a recovered compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.